The first presentation is from Helen Dombalis. She's from the National Farm to School Network. She serves as Policy and Strategic Partnerships Director for the National Farm to School Network. She has researched the role of local and regional food systems in bolstering community economic development, and now advocates for expanding access to healthy, sustainable food through school meal programs, gardens, food and agriculture education. And she's the policy co-chair for APHA's Food and Environment Working Group, and a big advocate for coming to the annual networking reception tonight, and holds a master's of public health and social work. The second presenter is Chinwe Onyekiri. Is that good? Okay, thanks. Along with Stephanie Weiss, other authors are Jenny Weisbord, Mukethe Kwanzi, Madeline Saldivar, and Chinwe is from Lankanon Medical Center, where she's the associate administrator. She's responsible for implementing innovative models for primary care, and she oversees the graduate medical education, financial enterprise, and business development, and builds relationships with community-based organizations in the Philadelphia area. She received her MPH at Columbia's Mailman School of Public Health and a certificate in business essentials from Wharton Business at UPenn. And then next we'll hear from Anthony Olivari. Anthony. His presentation is co-authored by Michael DeLuca, Tina Phillips, Lindsay Corrales, and Anthony is the founder of, oh, a lot of letters, but Food for Health, the Environment, Economy, and Democracy, F-H-E-E-D. What's that? Feed. Oh, that's Feed. There you go. And has a master's in urban and regional planning from Florida Atlantic University with a specialization in community food systems planning and a certificate in GIS. He's a food systems consultant with the Broward Regional Health Planning Council, funded Touch Initiative, and a Fort Lauderdale resident since 1998. He's also originally from Cambridge, Massachusetts. And then last we will hear from Christine Montes in a presentation co-authored by Lauren Dunning, Michael Lees, and Jean Armbruster. Christine is a policy analyst with the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, and her work focuses on policy systems and environmental change strategies to improve access to healthier foods. Christine manages the Farmers Market EBT component of the Community Transformation Grant and works closely with a variety of partners such as the LA Food Policy Council, where she currently serves as chair of the Farmers Markets for All Working Group. I'll ask you just to silence your phones if you haven't already, and as I mentioned earlier, just hold questions until the end.
Hi, everyone. As was just said, my name is Helen Dombalis. I am the Policy and Strategic Partnerships Director for the National Farm to School Network. I am based in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. And I will just say a little bit more before I get started about the brief mention that I am involved in APHA's Food and Environment Working Group. So it's a working group that goes cuts across sections of APHA and is probably relevant if you're in this room to all of you because it has to do with food systems and environmental issues. So there will be, I'll pass this around, there is going to be a reception tonight that all of you are invited to. It's at a restaurant that I will not try to pronounce, it's a French word, and it starts at 6:45, and it would be great if you do plan to come, if you could just pull up your phone and try to register at some point. So I'll pass that around. And so today, as was mentioned, my presentation is going to be on building local health and equity, specifically through federal food and agriculture policy. So I'm going to do a brief introduction just for folks who might not be familiar with Farm to School or with the National Farm to School Network. I'll do a brief overview. There are also handouts and business cards at the back on that table if y'all want to grab those on the way out. So today I'm going to talk about two federal policies, the Child Nutrition Act and the Farm Bill. I do not have any relationships to disclose. So just a brief overview for folks who are not as familiar with Farm to School. Farm to School, as you can see on this graphic and also at the handout that I brought that's at the back, Farm to School is the literal farm to school, so buying local products and getting them into school cafeterias. But it's also about school gardens and education. And education is really broad. It can be things like taking kids out to do a farm tour, bringing farmers to the classroom, taste tests, cooking demonstrations. So it's really about experiential food education, with the idea being, as it related to this presentation, equity, that you really want to raise a generation of kids and of farmers where kids have that opportunity to access healthy, fresh foods. And then farmers are able to, especially small and limited resource farmers, have opportunities to partner with schools in their own community so they can keep a bigger share of that the dollar when they supply the schools. So that's a brief overview of farm to school. And when we think about farm to school, you know, a lot of us will think about the literal farm to school, that local procurement piece, but oftentimes you really need some of these other elements to make it successful. So when you have a child go into the school cafeteria and Farmer Josie's carrots are on that lunch line, the kid may have harvested a carrot from the school garden, or the child may have met Farmer Josie. So there's that buy-in, and the child really feels empowered and feels like she or he is making that food choice for themselves. So it's really about empowering children as well. So just a couple quick slides on the National Farm to School Network. And again, this is also at the back. We are an information networking and advocacy hub. So we connect people to people. I'll show you some slides on that in a moment. People to information. If you use Kayak for buying your flights, we have something similar for our resource database where it's you can set your search criteria. So if you want to find a lesson you can do with fifth graders on strawberries, you can go in and set your search criteria and find what it is you really need to be successful. Or if you're wanting to find farm to school resources on policy, you could go in and you could do that. And then, of course, the third piece is our advocacy work, which I'll talk about for the rest of this. The National Farm to School Network is, as our name implies, a network. So we have actually now over 10,000 members. Last month was Farm to School Month. Congress back in 2010 designated Farm to School Month in October. So we were super excited that just in the last month we now have 10,000 new members. All of you can join. You just go to farmtoschool.org and you'll get a monthly newsletter and find out about conferences and events. And then we have our 8 regional leads. I'll show you that on a slide. Our 51 state leads, our Minnesota state lead, Stephanie, is in the room. Hi. And then our national staff and advisory board. So we've divided the country. These are 8 regions. We've divided the country into 8 regions. So we partner with a community-based organization in each of the 8 regions of the country. So I'll just leave this up for a second so you can find out who it is in your community or in your state that is working on farm to school. And then a couple of last things to point out before we really dig into the meat of this. When I think about farm to school and when I do advocacy work on Capitol Hill or build the capacity of our network to do advocacy in their own communities, I really love this messaging point that farm to school is a triple win. So it's a win for kids, it's a win for farmers, and as you can see here, it's a win for communities. And I think that really relates to the health aspect of this. I'll point you to the last handout back there, the benefits of farm to school. So the health aspect of this is really predominantly about the kids and their families. So what the research shows, and this handout compiles all the research that's been done on farm to school, what the research tells us as an example is that we know when kids participate in farm to school, they actually eat more servings of fruits and vegetables. And it makes sense. If they've grown it in the school garden, they're going to be willing to taste that carrot that they pulled out of the ground. They planted that seed, they watched it grow, and then they got to pull it out. Or if they've met the farmer, they're going to, as I was saying earlier, feel really excited to then try that broccoli that's on the lunch line because they met that farmer and they feel like they have ownership and are empowered as part of the food choice that they're getting to make. So the benefits of farm to school, of course, connect to health, and it also goes into things like economic development for farmers. As I mentioned earlier, when you shorten that supply chain, the farmer is able to keep a bigger share of the dollar. So ultimately, economic development, of course, connects back to health, because when you are boosting community economic development, you're able to tackle problems like poverty in the community, which, of course, enables communities to then make healthier food choices. So one last thing I'll mention before I jump into the federal policy piece, just for folks who don't know about us, I already mentioned the National Farm to School Month, which happens every October. Of course, we are just now in November, so we've got a little ways to go. But if you want to make a note in your notes and you're interested in getting involved, usually in the spring is when we start looking for partners around the country to help promote Farm to School Month every October. And then our conference we host every other year. It's a Farm to Cafeteria conference. So we just had it in April. The next one won't be until 2016. But this really goes beyond just farm to school to farm to hospital, farm to prison, farm to college, farm to preschool. So really looking at all of the institutional players that are supplying food and what we can do across that supply chain. All right, so now I want to get to what I'm sure all of you are here to listen to, and that's really talking about how federal policy can be useful in advancing health equity. So I wanted to put this slide up because I think oftentimes, and I know I certainly, when I got into policy initially, thought this, we oftentimes think about policy and we think about just doing the advocacy with your elected officials to get that law passed and then you're done. What actually is the case is that about 80% of the law that's on the books, so that when you have the bill itself, but then you also have all the rules and the implementation of those laws, about 80% is all of that work that happens after the bill has been passed. So the rules, the regulations, that implementation is about 80% of what actually gets written down. So I think that's really important for everyone in this room. I mean, we're all advocates in our own communities at whatever level of policy or programmatic work you are in. We are all advocates, and I think it's important to think about the fact that you don't just have to go and connect with your elected official in order to be advancing health equity and advocating for health equity, because you have this entire policy process. So I will just give an example of the Child Nutrition Act, which I'll then dig into to show this policy process. So the Child Nutrition Act is a bill that gets reauthorized at the federal level by the U.S. Congress about every 5 years. So that's your authorization, where you actually have your elected officials writing those laws. They debate them, they make decisions, they listen to advocates, and then they pass that law. There are two ways that programs then get funded, and I apologize. I have no idea who's in the room, so I'm sorry if this is like well past your level. I'll be brief on this. So appropriations, you have two types of ways that programs get funded. They either get mandatory funding, where when the bill is passed, the implementing or the authorizing agency, the U.S. Congress, for example, says, yes, this matters. Let's just give this program mandatory funding for the next 5 years. Or Congress can say, we're going to give you discretionary funds, but that means every year you have to go through what is called the appropriations process, where you then have to go and advocate to the budget committee, or the appropriations committee, the folks making decisions about what the government's actually going to fund in a given year. So Congress will allocate potential resources for many more things than we end up having money to actually pay for. So appropriations means that then if you're an advocate, you have to go in and say, well, Congress said we could get $10 million. Will you please give us that $10 million? So the Appropriations Committee actually makes those decisions about what the piece of the pie looks like. So the point here, of course, again, is that it's not just about getting the law passed, but that it's then about advocating for implementation, if it has funding attached, or just implementation in general with the federal agency that's implementing it. So with the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, the Women, Infant, and Children Program, WIC, that's an example of a program. It's never had mandatory funding, so the WIC Association goes every year and advocates to Congress to fund that program. The implementing agency then takes the law, so USDA in this case, the Department of Agriculture, and they write the rules. So they say, all right, Congress passed this law, now here's how we're going to implement it. Here's how we want to carry out this program. And so that's an important step in the process, because federal agencies will ask you all for input. So that's an important part of ultimately advancing health equity, is weighing in after that law has passed, after the funding has been allocated, to let them know what really you meant when you advocated for that law. What did you really mean? And make sure that they get it right as they're implementing it. And then, of course, as the cycle goes back around, you have your evaluation. You see, did the law get implemented the way we wanted it to, or do we need to clarify the law next time around? And it comes back around to informing concepts as you reauthorize in the future. So the first federal policy I want to talk about is the Child Nutrition Reauthorization. CNR is just the acronym for it. I'll show you on the next slide. It's a whole host of different school meal and child nutrition programs. The name of the bill changes every time it's done, which is, again, about every 5 years. So the 2010 bill was the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act. And that bill, just a quick plug, expires next year. So that means that starting, really it's already started this year, but especially gearing up for January with the new Congress, we are going to be needing to let Congress know, going back to that policy cycle, what's worked well in the 2010 bill and what do we need to change when they prepare by hopefully next September to actually reauthorize that legislation. And if y'all want to check, hopefully folks are familiar with who is representing them in D.C., you can look at the Senate Agriculture Committee and House Education Committee list online to see if members of Congress that represent you are actually on these committees, because those are the two committees that are going to be ultimately really digging into the details to make that decision. So a brief background on child nutrition reauthorization, and I think this is really important because it connects back to the equity piece of all of this. So the Child Nutrition Act was originally focused on anti-hunger, recognizing that we had kids that had been going off to, you know, teenagers, young adults going off to war that needed not to be malnourished. So really, ultimately, at the beginning, it was an anti-hunger program. So we started with school lunch program. We added in breakfast. The WIC program I mentioned earlier for women's infants and children started, recognizing that those early years are really formative years of life for healthy habits. And then starting in 1992 for the food systems community and tying it back to community food was really exciting, because then it was the first time Congress said, let's not just focus on these programs being anti-hunger programs, but making sure that we're actually supporting economic development of local farmers, which, as I said earlier, ultimately becomes an anti-hunger strategy. When you're boosting community economic development, you're giving communities that opportunity to purchase food for themselves and make those decisions to support their own communities. So the WIC Farmers Market Nutrition Program was an opportunity for women and their families to purchase food from local farms. And then I'll talk more about another great example of that being the 2010 Farm to School Grant Program, which is an incredible success for us. So just for folks who aren't familiar, this is a more complete list of what's in the Child Nutrition Act. It, as I mentioned earlier, includes school lunch, school breakfast, after school, summer feeding, the child and adult care food program, so that's Head Starts, preschools, home daycare facilities, so a whole host of different feeding programs. And I think it's really important that we realize that there's this one opportunity about every 5 years where Congress actually digs in and looks at that list of programs. So the 2010 bill, the most recent bill, I would imagine most of you have heard about the nutrition standards debate that's been going on in the last year. The 2010 bill established new nutrition standards. So saying it's not just about feeding kids and buying, you know, USDA buying food or buying food from farms. It's about what we're actually feeding kids. So it included new requirements around sodium and fruit and vegetable. And also, if schools meet those new nutrition standards, attaching with that more money. So it was the first time in several decades that Congress actually allowed schools to get more money for school meals, so long as they were meeting these new standards. So it's been a pretty big national media story lately, where now there are members of Congress trying to roll back those standards, saying, actually, why do we as a federal government need to be telling kids what to eat? So I won't go into it more, but we do know that moving into next year with the reauthorization, that's going to be a huge debate. So I want to talk now about the Farm to School Grant Program. So this was the first time ever that the federal government allocated resources, dollars, for a program to connect communities with farm to school opportunities. So it's a competitive grant program at $5 million a year. You can see here that the demand was absolutely through the roof and just in the first 2 years, fiscal year 13 and 14. So more than five times as many applications went into USDA as there is funding available. So what's important here to know, and I'll get to this in a minute as well, is that this Farm to School Grant Program is an example of how federal policy has responded to what communities want. We've had this huge growth since the 1990s in Farm to School, starting with just a handful of programs, to now seeing, as you'll see on that handout at the back, over 40,000 programs. Again, that's in less than two decades, this enormous growth. So what we heard from communities is they wanted some commitment from the federal government to actually support farm to school. So now we're seeing that happen. USDA is implementing that funding. Excuse me. So the last thing I want to hit on, so that was the Child Nutrition Act. I want to hit on the Farm Bill. Folks, have you all heard of the Farm Bill? I'm seeing lots of head nods. So I won't go into this one as much. The current name it passed back in February is the Agricultural Act of 2014. Over 80% or about 80% is of the entire spending of the Farm Bill is SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps. Same committee on the Senate side as the Child Nutrition Act. It's the Senate Ag Committee. On the House side, it's the House Ag Committee. And that little infographic up at the top shows that it is a very comprehensive bill. It's not just nutrition. It's conservation and commodities and energy programs and research. It's a whole host of things. Specifically, as I did with the Child Nutrition Act, explaining the Farm to School Grant Program being an example of success, I want to talk about the Local Farms, Food, and Jobs Act. So a marker bill is really just an ideas bill. So when you know that a reauthorization is coming up, like the Farm Bill or like the Child Nutrition Act, all sorts of different organizations, APHA will do this, lots of organizations will decide that they want to introduce a marker bill. And it's never going to get voted on, but it's really just about sharing ideas. I am at my time, so I'm going to plow through this. So it's about saying, the advocacy community saying, here are some ideas for what we'd actually like to see you include in the final Farm Bill or in the final Child Nutrition Bill. So this marker bill is something I actually worked on in a previous role at the National Sustainable Ag Coalition, where we did listening sessions and gathered ideas from around the country. It had over 40 provisions. I'm not going to talk about all of them. But I'll talk about two quickly. The idea here being that in order to be successful with advancing health equity at the federal level, it really takes getting ideas and generating ideas from the community to then implement and advocate for in Washington. So the two things I want to talk about are the Farmers Market and Local Food Promotion Program. That program already existed previously, just as the Farmers Market Promotion Program, really about making sure that farmers markets, CSAs, community supported agriculture, all the ways farmers connect directly with consumers, they have funding to go out and promote themselves. It's an incentive to get producers to really make sure that consumers know about them. And then FINI, the Food Insecurity and Nutrition Incentives, is a brand new program. Congress allocated $100 million in this new Farm Bill to actually incentivize local healthy food for SNAP customers. So both of these provisions came from ideas. FINI is based on Double Up Food Bucks in Michigan and a few other examples where you're actually doubling up on SNAP dollars to make sure that those customers have access to healthy, fresh foods at a rate that they can afford with those dollars. So it took advancing health equity at the federal level, it took generating those ideas in communities to then get to that point. The last thing I'll mention then, because I know I'm out of time, is that partners and coalitions are absolutely essential to being successful at any level of federal policy, but also at state and local policy. So I just wanted to put up here some of the many coalitions that are involved in the Farm Bill and that are involved in the Child Nutrition Act. I won't read through them all, but the National Alliance for Nutrition and Activity is a big one, of course, for public health, and there are many, many more that help to actually make all of this possible. State Farm to School Policy, I just wanted to briefly mention we have this report. We compile all the Farm to School Policy done at the state level. I'll be giving a presentation on that tomorrow if you're interested. And then there's my contact information. That's it.